I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 13th of October. Our guest this hour writes a very informative and important piece in these times. She writes about new motherhood and says that many other cultures treat new motherhood, immediate postnatal period, as a sacred time. Both new mother and her baby receive help and special attention. And really, throughout history and all over the world, people have tended to carve out a minimum of at least 6 weeks in which women are exempt from responsibilities other than childcare. Well, in her article, The Real War on Families, Why the U.S. Needs Paid Leave Now, she writes, one in four employed mothers in this country return to work within 2 weeks of childbirth. It's not just wealthy, social, democratic Nordic countries that make us look bad, she said, and we'll talk about what policies they have momentarily. With the exception of a few small countries like Papua New Guinea and Suriname, every other nation in the world, rich or poor, now requires paid maternity leave. So what's going on in the United States? And what are the effects, the devastating emotional and physical effects for both newborn babies and for their parents, particularly for their moms? Sharon Lerner is our guest. She's a journalist who's covered many issues of concern to women for a number of years. She's the author of The War on Moms, on Life in a Family Unfriendly Nation. She's written for the New York Times, New York Times Magazine, Washington Post, Salon.com, Slate, and Ms. And she's with us this hour to talk about maternity leave and how it is not very prevalent and why that's the case in the United States. Going back to work within 2 weeks, and some of the women she profiled went back to work after 1 week after giving birth. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Or on Facebook as well, where we like to read your comments. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And you can also find us on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Sharon. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Hi.
Hi. You know, I could read that one sentence over and over and still can't believe it. One in four employed mothers returning to work after 2 weeks after they have given birth. That's just amazing.
It is. I think the bigger picture that it represents is stunning. I should say, I'd like to add that data, that is what the Department of Labor numbers show. It's important to note, though, that study wasn't done to look at that question, so that the number of the sample size ends up being small. Mm-hmm. It should be a much bigger study designed to look at that, and hopefully people will do that soon and we'll know even more. But it is shocking.
Yes, it's completely shocking, as are the stories that you highlight in your very important article. And it's not just, we think of Sweden and Finland and all of those social democracies where there are very generous benefits, but you also cite every other nation in the world, if they're rich nations or even if they're poor nations, require paid maternity leave.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I don't remember the agency, might have been the World Health Organization, I don't know. There's a list of the 10 poorest countries in the world based on per capita income. And every single country on that list provides paid family leave, or paid maternity leave, I should say. You know, and of course, the amount isn't going to be high when you're in, you know, the Democratic Republic of Congo or whatever. These are really poor countries. Employment rates are low. And the amount of pay that people are actually receiving is incredibly low, too. That said, they have these protections on the books, and we still don't. And it really is stunning.
Yeah, and you talk about this being very rich historical history as well, and that other cultures do treat new motherhood as really a sacred time.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense, right? I mean, for everyone, regardless of how well your birth goes, there's a certain amount of recovery time that has to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a physical ordeal. There's that part of it. And then there's also the part that you have a very brand new human being. And there are all sorts of things that have to happen in the very early time of that new human being's life. So there's bonding, of course, but there's just a lot of caretaking. And some of the folks that I spoke to, they just didn't have time to do these really basic things, you know, get used to holding their infant. And of course, you know, in the first few weeks of life, these are babies who can't sit up on their own yet. They can't smile yet. They can't do anything for themselves yet. Mm. And as you said, I think in most of the rest of the world, there is some acknowledgement that it's important for a new mother and new baby to be together in that time.
You highlight some really heartbreaking stories of several women in your piece. Let's talk about Benrahu. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The mom of a very sick baby who planned so carefully to have to get pregnant at a time when child care might be available and to take care of whatever benefits she might get. And we can make great plans, but sometimes they just don't happen.
Yeah, Lee Benrahu is who you're talking about, and she really did break my heart because she did everything right. She was so careful. She thought about, she educated herself about paid leave in this country, which is to say she went out and found out about the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, which, as she knew, covers companies that have 50 employees or more and entitles those employees to up to 12 weeks off unpaid.
Mm-hmm.
So she figured out about that. She made sure that she was employed by a company that had at least 50 workers in it. And she knew that she wasn't going to get paid leave, but she knew that she was entitled to time off without pay. So she actually purchased a supplementary insurance plan which entitled her to time to pay while she was in the hospital. And so she kind of set up her own paid leave for herself, even though her company didn't provide it, as most don't. And so it was a fairly new job, but she knew she wanted to have another baby. And so she kind of went about figuring out how to do this. And she knew that the FMLA doesn't kick in until you've been at a job for at least a year. So she figured, she kind of went and looked at the calendar and figured out that in order to do that, she would, I don't remember the exact month when she would need to start trying, but she kind of figured it out. And she even allowed for some wiggle room in case the baby should come early. So she did this great job of planning. But unfortunately, life doesn't always, you know, she didn't get the memo. And so she ended up having her baby even earlier, far earlier than most, and that anyone could have reasonably expected. And I believe it was at 26 weeks that her son was born. Mm. And of course, at that stage, survival's a real question. So it's an incredible trauma, of course. And she wound up without the paid leave that she had planned for. And, of course, more importantly, she wound up with an incredibly sick newborn. Mm-hmm. And so when she might have been thinking about and of course she was thinking about the survival of this child, she was also thinking about what on earth am I going to do to make sure that my family stays afloat, that I can continue in my job. And so she went back to work within a little less than 2 weeks, I believe, right after her tiny, tiny, very sick baby was born. And when she described that process of going back and really being in, you know, a haze, she was wearing, you know, she practically is still pregnant. And you have these, you know, your body isn't the same again. She was in pain. And, of course, emotionally, all she could think about was, you know,
baby.
Was her son. Yeah, if he was going through surgeries and whatnot, what was going on with him. So it's not ideal for parents in that situation. It's certainly not ideal for kids. But I would say it's not ideal for employers either to have people back at work who rightfully should be elsewhere and probably are mentally anyway.
Mm-hmm. And she had a special circumstance. It's a horribly sad, sad story, and I don't know how she got through all of it. But for people who have births that go full 9 months still, the exhaustion that you feel, and also this sense of it is a sacred thing that's happening here, and where you want to be and feel just instinctively you need to be because of the helplessness of this creature you've brought into the world, that you need to be with that little person for a while because they're depending on you, because you gave birth to this little person.
Yeah, and you know, there's sort of a flip side to all of this. When you mentioned, I think you used the word instinctively, and I think for many people there is this feeling, wait a minute, I just had a baby. I want to be with that baby.
Yes.
And so many people, many women do, faced with this situation, decide, I'm just going to go be with that baby, you know? And they leave their jobs. And, you know, while some may think of that as, you know, a willing decision that they chose to leave their jobs, I would say they do that often under duress because it's this either or, you know, neither of which is really okay. And so I think in many cases, research shows it's very difficult to re-enter the workforce. And when you do so at a lower salary level often. And so that's another consequence that I didn't so much go into this into in the article, but that's a big problem as well.
So what are the percentages in this country? What percentage of women have access to paid maternity leave, however short it may be, Sharon?
It's very low, and I'm thinking it's, I have it in the article, and I'm thinking it's either 13 or 14%.
Very low.
Yeah, it's very low. And so, you know, you have people who are going back to work very early. You have people who are leaving their jobs. And you have people who are sometimes staying home if they do have FMLA leave at a big financial cost is the other thing. You know, there are people for whom losing a few weeks income can be really grave, and there are those people as well.
Mm-hmm. And you highlight those people, as is the case with a lot of things in this country. Those who have not have to pay the biggest price. You talk about women who are working incredible number of hours. They don't get to see their newborns. Then they're picking up extra work on the weekends, overnight shifts, in order to just make ends meet.
Yeah, and it's not what you think of. You know, often on ads and in the movies, you see this kind of, this, you know, Vaseline lens kind of beautiful. You think of this time where women are in their rockers with their, you know, with their little infants, and it's just this golden moment. And that is certainly not what I was seeing. Some of those women that you're talking about, I interviewed in Mississippi, where one of the, you know, the poorest states in the country, but there are, of course, low-income women all over the country facing this, where there's just not, it's not an option to take a lot of time off, you know? And so I talked to one woman, Tamala, who I think you're mentioning. Tamala Wheeler is the woman who, when her daughter was 5 weeks old, in that particular week, she worked 88 hours, and she works for both Walmart and AutoZone. And I was really struck by the way that she talked to me about this, which was that she volunteered that they're both lovely companies to work for. She was not bitter about this. And yet she was going back to work these crazy long hours with this very, very small baby, and kind of saw that as her own burden because she chose to have a child. And that's another thing that I find striking when I've done this research, is it's just this sense that women often have that in deciding to have a child, they've decided to take on all this burden and
yes,
hardship.
Yes.
And this sort of this lack of a sense that it could be any other way, which I find very striking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of women feel that way. So what is it about America that seems to make this a peculiarly American problem? Why don't we provide what everybody else in the world provides?
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, in short, The terrible short answer is that I don't know. But I have some clues that have helped me understand it. One is that there have been people fighting for paid maternity leave since at least 1919. That was as far back as I found. Yeah, and one of the shocking things that there's this group of people pushing for this 1919, which I should say is when many of the other countries that do have it in Europe adopted it, and some much before that. Germany had it before it. But many countries, there's sort of this international push going on. Many European countries did get it around then. And there was a parallel push here in the United States, which in part failed because some of the folks working on it wanted to make sure that paid leave was pushed along with their plan for universal health care, which heartbreakingly they also thought was sort of around the corner. But so there have been folks working on this, and it's not that people don't see it. It's just that the argument against it, I think, has mostly been that, we're a country of doers and people who take care of themselves. And it's a sense of personal responsibility that folks should be able to, shouldn't be asking for anything from their government. And so I don't think that's what's going on in the countries where people do get paid leave, which is to say virtually everywhere else. But I do think that there is this sort of myth that has worked against folks who are trying to do this. And these days, in sort of the modern battles about this, often the argument is, and it comes often from chambers of commerce and other business forces, that we can't afford it. And it's very worth unpacking that argument. And so I will.
Yeah.
So we can't afford it. I guess, the first question is, who is we? And often the implication is that it's employers and businesses and that we're going to put them out of business. Well, we do actually have three states now that have paid leave, New Jersey and California and Rhode Island. And in those places, it's actually not employers who are paying for it, but a surtax on employees. So it's like basically comes out of, it's a very small tax on employees' paychecks, which ends up being spread out over, the whole state of workers and not being a huge amount. So when in California, which has had paid family leave for over 10 years, there's been great research done by Eileen Applebaum and Ruth Milkman, who showed that there is no negative impact on business. And I actually did some similar research in New Jersey and found the same thing. There's no impact on the bottom line of the companies that end up providing it. And of course, it's not, again, providing from the money isn't coming from the companies themselves, but from the workers.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we have a lot of messages that have come in already. We're talking this hour about why it is that America is almost alone among, this is just amazing to me, all nations on earth in not providing for paid maternity leave or family leave for people. And moms, 1 in 4, are returning to work within 2 weeks of childbirth. It's hard on the baby, it's hard on the mom, it's hard on the family. Why is it that we don't have this in the United States, except for, as our guest just told us, Sharon Lerner, three states in this country? Is it because we're workaholics? Why have we fought this for such a long period of time? And we have yet to talk very much about what the ramifications are for the newborn and also for the moms. What happens when you go back to work at 2 weeks after giving birth? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we have quite a few messages, and thank you for them, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Sharon Lerner is our guest, award-winning investigative journalist who is the author of The War on Moms, On Life in a Family Unfriendly Nation. She writes about the real war on families, why the U.S. needs paid leave now in these times. To you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, what was your birth experience when you gave birth? For those of you who did you have to return to work fairly immediately? What were the costs thereof? Do you think that we need paid maternity or family leave in this country? And why in the world are we the only country in the world that doesn't have this? Why in America? Well, we're welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join the conversation. Let's start with the Facebook message. We have many. Abigail writes, "My son was born 7 weeks premature and spent a month in the hospital. When my leave was up, he weighed just 6 pounds, too small for daycare, needing feeding every 2 hours. My husband quit his job to care for him. Maybe if I had the option for more leave, even if it was unpaid, we wouldn't have had to go down to one income, and I could have spent time with my very tiny son." I'll bet there are just all kinds of stories like that, Sharon.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think there are. And each one is heartbreaking in its own special way. I'm so sorry that happened. And again, there are consequences for her emotionally, and of course financially as well.
And you talk about what the consequences are for moms and what the consequences are for newborns too. Mm-hmm. What are they?
Well, with mothers, there have been numerous studies showing linking depression in mothers with a very early return to work, which makes sense. And for children, there's a reduction in the time that children nurse, which also makes sense, in their frequency of visits to pediatricians. And there's this incredible research that was done by someone named Christopher Room, and he looked at European data and actually showed that over the years in which the amount of paid leave increased historically over years, and he was able to tie that increase to a reduction not just in kids' morbidity and the illnesses they had, but also in mortality, that there was a slight reduction in child mortality with an increase in the amount of paid leave, which I always found stunning, right?
Mm-hmm. That is stunning. Stacy is calling in from Milwaukee. Hi, Stacy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm on maternity leave right now. I have a 2-month-old, and I decided that I'm a school administrator, and I decided that the maternity leave that they were offering just wasn't long enough for me. So my husband and I tried to work it out so that I would just stay home, and then I got a little bit afraid. I didn't want to lose my career entirely, and now I'm working part-time. But this is a great topic. I think there's a lot of pressure to stay in your career, and mm-hmm. you feel like you're going to lose momentum if you stay home with your baby. And I was even told by my boss when I said I wanted to work part-time, she said, "Well, you just want to have your cake and eat it too," and was not very supportive of my decision to work part-time. And I just think there's this stigma that if you stay home and you take that time, even if you take the full 12 weeks, that somehow you're less dedicated to your career. Mm-hmm. And so we're just, I feel like a lot of people that I work with are kind of fighting that battle too, of wanting to be taken seriously in the workplace while still being respected and given that time for their family too.
Stacy, what would be ideal for you if you could arrange what would work for you? What would it be?
I think I kind of have the ideal situation right now with working part-time. Mm-hmm. I was able to take about a month and a half off entirely, and now I'm back part-time for, I'm thinking, probably around a year, and then I'll reevaluate and see. But I'm the kind of person, I don't have somebody taking the other half of my job. Even though I'm classified as part-time, I'm still doing a full-time job. I'm just fitting it in. I'm just working, you know, I'm in the building less, and I'm doing more work at home and doing more work via email and over the phone. But I think it is kind of the best of both worlds. If more paid time was offered, I would be more than willing to step away. But you know, like I mentioned before, I don't want to lose the traction that I've worked right. so hard to gain in my career, too.
Mm-hmm. Sharon.
Well, wow, I just the having the cake and eating it, too, that just breaks my heart
right.
because, you know, while that is a jab, think about what she means, she or he, I can't remember, but the having the cake means you actually want to work and spend some time with your child. Now, what kind of an accusation is that? You know, of course you do. But I should say, I mean, first, kudos to you. That's amazing. And it sounds like I'm so glad that you're in a place where you feel, you know, satisfied with what's going on. But it also seems so hard to me to do essentially a full-time job and get paid half for it. You know, that, you know, from the outside doesn't seem ideal. And it's worth pointing out, you know, again, that we have become adjusted and just used to this culture of, you know, we must do it all and we, you know, we must, which not to say that we must kind of, you know, basically take on all the hardship ourselves. Like, you are doing something very difficult. And it's worth pointing out that in Europe, for instance, the average paid leave is 9 months.
Oh, my
God. So paid. And people don't, when they take it, there isn't this accusation that, you know, well, you have, you know, you want your cake and you eat it too. I think there's just more of an acceptance that this is part of life and this is part of work, you know, that humans reproduce and it's a big thing and it requires caretaking. And it requires caretaking ideally for men and women both. But I just wish it weren't so hard for everyone. Anyway, congratulations is what
yes.
I should have led with, but
yeah.
congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Stacey. And is she justified in her feeling? And I think a lot of women feel that way, that you have to work, you have to keep working, even though it's really taxing and you don't want to be doing that because you are justifiably worried about losing your job?
I think that's true. I mean, different fields, it's different, and I'm not sure how it is within her school district or within her field. But certainly, there are lots of areas in which, when you scale back, you lose a foothold. That is certainly true, and there's a lot of research showing that your income, as I said, you know, when you take time off, you often, if you leave jobs, you re-enter at a lower level and such. Yes,
Tina in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I'm an OB nurse case manager, so I work with pregnant ladies all day long. That's what my job is. And I hear so many stories and talk with so many women every day about their plans, you know, after they deliver. And it's sad to say in some cases, but a lot of them are very happy that maybe they'll get 12 weeks off. And some are even happy, like, oh, I get 6 weeks, so that's good. And we have become very complacent, you know, in our society, thinking that this is just normal and this is okay. And, you know, then I hear the women who have to go on bed rest early and who are concerned about how am I going to pay my bills because, you know, I'm not going to have any time to spend with my baby and all of these things. I hear these issues every single day. And I really think, and I don't want to sound hardened about this issue, but I really think if this was men, it would be very different in our society. And because it's an issue that women deal with, we're just not taken seriously about it. It's very sad. And you know, we also have to think about going back to work in 6 weeks and what is your mental health status and postpartum depression. And these are issues that really never get addressed on how we manage these.
Sharon.
Yeah, I mean, I think it absolutely needs to be an issue that is both men and women. And that's part of the cultural shift that has to happen. And I also agree with that it's a culture of scarcity. As you said, we're all just so adjusted to, 6 weeks, wait, you know. And so, you know, we kind of lack this vision because we've been forced into this, you know, this tight box that it could be different. And thus, since it could be different, then we actually need to push for it to be different.
And here's a man. Thank you so much, Tina, for your call. A man weighing in on this. It's a disgrace and an embarrassment. Americans don't have paid maternity leave for both the mother and father. I took only 1 week unpaid. He says, as a father, you're almost made to feel guilty taking time to stay home with your family. And my wife used her built-up vacation. This country and state is basically getting another future taxpayer off the backs of the American worker. My wife and me were the ones building this country, not your manufacturer or employers.
Yeah. You know, I should mention another amazing thing that's come out of California, where, again, they've had paid leave for 10 years or more, is, you know, and that is available to both men and women. And we've actually seen an incredible rise in the number of men who are taking time off to be with their infants there. So it's sort of followed the policy. And I did a piece on this a while back and interviewed a bunch of men there and really heard that there's a shift in the workplace, too, where at first it was like, whoa, you want time off? And then it was, oh, I had this, and they see other people doing it. And a lot of men are really appreciative of that.
Mm-hmm. What is the status of the Obama administration's executive order extending, what is it, a week of paid sick leave to federal contractors?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the very latest on that, but the Obama has been pushing, doing his part throughout his time as president to move this forward. And his labor secretary, Tom Perez, has put this, made this a priority. Unfortunately, there's not that much they can do, and thus they, you know, resort to executive orders and such. They've also put some which is to say that, you know, they could potentially, what we need to have here is the federal law, right? And a federal law needs to be passed by Congress. And while there is federal legislation that's been proposed to on this, it doesn't have a shot right now. So at this point, we're left with executive orders and state legislation. And the Obama administration has put grant money out there for states to help them get state paid leave laws passed. And that's wonderful and that's helpful. But what we really need, again, is a federal law.
Mm-hmm. I don't recall, I've seen both of the Republican presidential debates, I don't recall this issue being addressed there. You remind us that at least the two frontrunners on the Democratic side are in favor of paid family leave.
Absolutely. And when it's interesting, when you look at polls of voters, the vast majority of Republicans, as well as Democrats, the numbers are higher among Democrats. But also when you look at Republicans, the vast majority of voters think it's a good idea. Unfortunately, when you look at the folks who are in the field as possible presidential candidates, you know, nobody's taking this on.
We're talking this hour about the real war on families, why the U.S. needs paid leave now. The author of the piece appearing in These Times is our guest this hour, Sharon Lerner. She is the author of The War on Moms, on Life in a Family Unfriendly Nation. And she reminds us of what everybody else in the world does. Why don't we? That 1 in 4 women return to work 2 weeks after giving birth to a child. And she looks at the effects on the children and the moms. And what if things don't go as planned for women who are not wealthy women in this country, trying to piece together your leave, and if you are on bed rest or if your child is born early, everything is up for grabs and people are returning to work when they are still recovering and healing, and the child is perhaps being cared for by somebody in the family, but that can get to be a burden too. It's just, it's hard. It's really hard for so many women, particularly. Why do we do this in America? Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I think it's very simple. All you do is transfer the wasted money that we're spending on the war on terror, supposedly, and the War Department, And transfer it to families, women, and mothers, and children. I mean, we lost $2.3 trillion. They couldn't find it in 2001. Rumsfeld says, we don't know what happened to the $2.3 trillion in the defense budget. We don't know where it is. And now we're spending $1.5 trillion every year to attack and to enforce a new world order.
Is it a question of money? Is that basically what a government response has been? It's just going to be way too expensive, Sharon?
Well, I think that has been, as I said, that is a reason that people often use when they try to argue against it. But again, it's not a huge expense, and it's coming, and if it's coming off of mostly of workers' pay, then I don't, you know, and the workers and the voters, i.e. workers themselves, are in favor of it, it's hard to see that money is the issue. You know, so it is really confusing when you get down to what really is the nature, the reason for opposing it. And I think it, I think it has to do with a resistance to what people think, or the, you know, folks in a certain arm of the business lobby think of as mandates, that you're telling business what to do and how to relate to their workers. And this is sort of thought of as a sacrosanct area. You can't tell business owners how to do business.
Yeah. Let's go to Patty in Fox Valley. Hi, Patty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I really like the last caller's comments about throwing more money at it, and just think what a, you know, wonderful world it would be if we could put money like that into the worth of kids, you know, and the uncounted speechless. Anyway, the point I wanted to make was the earlier caller that talked about having her cake and eating it too, the quote from her boss. She did mention that she worked in the public sector, and I think for people that have the luxury of, let's say, being a teacher or working in the public sector where there is a union behind them, they are in a much better position to navigate those waters than, I would say, the other 95% of us. So, they are able to, you know, plan the birth of their child and have the summer off and then, you know, take leave time on top of that, which is a wonderful thing. I mean, I want to see everybody be able to have that time off with the newborn. What's the most precious time and the connections that are made and all of that. We need, everybody needs to be behind that. That benefits our entire society. But the other point I wanted to just make is I'm from a family of five girls. We're all professionals. We all work. Some of us have kids and some of us don't. And we've had this conversation amongst us. And, and I feel that it is a valid point. And some of the ones that don't have children have said, you know, it's unfair. They are picking up the slack for people when they decide to have a baby. And whether or not their companies have paid leave, I don't know the situation there. But just that, their workload increases, and there's a feeling of resentment there. Like, you know, what am I getting out of this? You know, this person's getting this time off. It may or may not be paid. Like I said, I don't know. But a underlying feeling of resentment. And good Lord, if that's coming from other women, imagine what the men are thinking.
You know? Sharon, what do you think?
I think, again, I'm hearing this culture of scarcity where, you know, it breaks my heart to think about, you know, but they have, you know, this teacher who gets to have a tiny bit more, you know, is living the good life. None of us are really living the good life, and we should all be, as the caller said. But also, you know, what do people who don't have children get out of any of it? Well, the entire we need to perpetuate the species. We need future workers and taxpayers, and I don't think it should be seen as an indulgence to procreate and have kids. I think it's, you know, if you don't want to do it, I get that too, and I respect that, but it shouldn't it shouldn't. I think businesses, whether they be private or workplaces that are public, need to think of the act of having children as part of life and part of what you plan for when you plan how your business or workplace operates. And thus, you know, most places do. They have all these built-in ways of adjusting for the absence of employees. And I think, again, it's part of life. And I wish that we didn't all feel quite so desperate about it, but I do get why we do. And I do think, you know, my book came out several years ago, but in it I really, in one chapter I kind of went into this, you know, there's been a lot of fighting and tension among various groups of women, working women and non-working women in particular, and some of it has been hyped up and played up with the whole war on moms thing. But I think some of that has to do, again, with this culture of scarcity, where the choices can be so dire that it feels like, you know, that everybody must have it better because what you have really sucks. And I am sad about that.
Yeah. Well, and we could expand the conversation, too, that if we're talking about paid family leave, if we expand it a bit, everybody has a time in his or her life, if you have children, if you don't have children, where you may be sick for yourself or where somebody in your family may be sick and you need to be off work and you need to make a living as well. And so there should be paid family leave, too.
Absolutely. And when you look at the legislation, that's actually what it is in California and in New Jersey. I'm not quite sure if it's parental or family in Rhode Island, but so far, at least two of the three, if not three of the three, have that it's not just taking care of a newborn, but also a sick relative. So, and right, as you said, that's virtually everybody. I don't know anyone, myself, who hasn't had one of those things happen
right
at some point.
Yeah, they do. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Sharon Lerner is our guest. We're talking about paid family leave and focusing particularly on having a child because this statistic is just phenomenal. One in four employed mothers return to work within 2 weeks of childbirth. We are the only country, every other nation in the world, except for a few small countries like Papua New Guinea and Suriname, now require paid maternity leave. Every other country. Why don't we? 800-486-8655. Sharon is a journalist who's covered many issues of concern to women for many years, and the article that she wrote in These Times caught our attention, The Real War on Families, Why the U.S. Needs Paid Leave Now. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Greg is next in Glidden. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kathleen and Sharon. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Fine. Thank you. Yes, I like this. No, why is it the government? Like you said, I think Obama should sign an executive order regarding giving those families paid maternity leave and sick leave and all that stuff. And I'm very disappointed that the business groups, I can't understand why those business groups would be opposed to that, which is kind of, doesn't that seem kind of fascist to me about the GOP siding with those groups?
I should say, can I just mention here that there are some business groups that have come out in support of these policies, and it's been really important for in the states where it has passed to have the support of business owners and some of the business lobby. So that's been interesting.
And what about an executive order? He's done that with federal contractors, right? Could he do just a blanket executive order?
I don't think so. No, I don't. I think what we need here is an actual law. And we have the legislation, as I mentioned. Right now, again, as I said, he's been putting money into having states pass their own laws, which if you look at other kinds of legislation is sometimes the way it goes, often the way it goes. For instance, with the minimum wage, you see that it happens in various states and then it happens generally then it might trickle up sort of to the federal level. And with this, we've seen, again, three states. There are a number of other states that are considering it. New York is one of them. And the idea is that eventually it'll trickle up. I think with this particular issue, that's going to have to happen sooner rather than later because it's sort of complicated, but the three states that have it already have this temporary disability insurance system in place as part of their state law. There are only two other states that have that. New York is one of them. And that makes it very easy to implement. They basically expand this insurance system and use part of it for parental leave or family leave. But without that, it might be harder. And we've seen that in Washington state, which actually years ago did also pass the parental leave bill, but they weren't able to implement it because they didn't have this insurance thing in place. So I do think that we're looking ultimately at a national law. The question is when we're going to have the right environment where we can actually pass such a law.
Oh, it might take another 100 years, huh?
Oh, don't say that.
I won't. Thanks, Greg, for the call. Terry and Slinger, hi.
Hi. First of all, I'm 60 years old, and I feel the need to apologize to all women of this generation because I feel like part of this is from my women, the women of my generation, who were so proud when they could go back to work right away, or they worked right up to their due date, and their water broke at work, and they went to the hospital. And in my situation, I was a professional, and my daughter was born in April, but in January, my doctor said that I needed to stop working, and I did, and I was paid all the way from January to April, and then she was born, and she had a bone disease, and so I was given 8 weeks off because it was a cesarean. You got 8 weeks if it was cesarean, 6 if it was a regular birth, and then at the end of the 8 weeks, I had to quit because she had a lot of broken bones and things. Oh. And then in December, I received a check for 2 weeks vacation pay. And that's the way it was back then. That was what was expected. That was in 1980. And now it's changed. And I think a lot of that is because of women who said, look at me, I'm working right up to my due date, and I don't need any of the time off. And they just ran with that.
Hmm. Well, I don't remember our having that kind of wonderful policy. What kind of work did you do, Terry?
I was really a female in an all-male position. Uh-huh. I was a non-destructive test technician at the time.
Oh. Wasn't that still rare? That wasn't common for women in the 60s or 70s or 80s, was it? Sharon?
Well, yeah, I don't think it was so common, but certainly there, I mean, when you look at the debate that was leading up to the passage of the FMLA, I mean, I think that there were sort of mixed feelings among feminists about what to emphasize and concerns about emphasizing the reproductive aspect of women's lives, right? Because as you said, there is this sort of, you know, this focus understandably on equality and a concern that thinking about reproduction would undercut that. Mm-hmm. I think that's certainly true.
Mm-hmm. Cheyenne says this on Facebook, this topic confirms my decision not to have children and follow other aspirations that I have instead. I can't imagine dealing with the stress these families have endured.
Oh, that seems sad. I don't think that's a good reason not to do it. Though if you don't want to have kids, I get that. But you know, it's, I think we should focus more on making it easier to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks very much, Terry, for the call. Well, thank you so much, Sharon, for writing this article and presenting all of these, putting it all together so that we have an understanding of what we do, why do we do what we do here. I don't know if we know that completely, but thank you for outlining what's going on with families and what the situation is. It's a very important article. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Sharon Lerner, and the piece is in These Times, The Real War on Families, Why the U.S. Needs Paid Leave Now. She's also the author of The War on Moms, On Life in a Family-Unfriendly Nation. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and for on-air production in Milwaukee.